You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of November 5, 2013. Woo! It's not Halloween. Halloween's over, but that's all I thought to say. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I'm back here with my main partner in crime and a new partner in crime, a new dynamic on the Punk News Podcast, if you will. To my left is the ever lovable, the ever thoughtful, the intelligent, the independent businessman, the mover and shaker, Adam White, managing editor. Adam, how you doing?
I'm also wearing pajamas.
You see, that's how much of a businessman Adam is. Even when he's about to go to sleep, he's still getting business done.
But yeah, I mean, proper business pajamas.
Isn't 9:30 a little early to be putting on pajamas?
Well, the question is at what point am I supposed to wear pants until?
Oh, so you're saying you were wearing pajamas all day long?
I don't even know what I'm saying. At some point, I decided I'm done wearing like normal human clothes that you can go outside in.
Well, is that because now you've got a kid? And Adam, do you feel like a dad now? I mean, do you think of yourself as a dad?
Yeah, I do. I don't think of myself as like a sitcom dad, which is really like the canonical dad in North American culture, right?
But like Bill Cosby?
Yeah, like not Bill Cosby.
Have you ever stood at the foot of your stables and yelled, "Rudy"?
I'm entirely tempted to, at random, from now on.
Adam, if you're in a coffee shop and there's a hip, youthful male in one area and a dad in the other, who's going to talk to you first?
I'd like to think that I still, like, I don't know, dress like the hip, youthful male would talk to me and I don't, like, wear Bill Cosby sweaters, but I'm pretty sure, knowing by the people I associate to, it's probably the dad because kids scare me.
Well, fair enough. And also,
you can't trust them.
You can't trust the kid. If the kids are united, they will never be divided, which is kind of duplicative when you think about it. But even so, you can't trust them because if they are united, they will not be divided. And you don't ever fight a united youthful front, that's for sure.
I make all of my personal life decisions by Sham69 lyrics.
fair enough. And also with a guy who knows a lot about 69 is Christopher Barrett, interviewer. And Chris, I always get you confused on Facebook because one of my best friends at law school is Christopher Barnett as opposed to Christopher Barrett. So I always get you two confused.
Well, everyone gets confused with Barrett and Barnett because usually when I order something, or when I'm called out somewhere, like a doctor's office or something, the initial reaction is, "Oh, Christopher Barnett," and then I correct them to say Barrett, and they're like, "Oh, I thought I saw an N there," and I'm like, "No, there is no N there." So, you know, hey, it's common.
I used to know with Joe Barrett and Adam. What you will appreciate this: Joe Barrett was next door neighbors with I forgot the guy's name now. The guy that used to write Detective Comics and Action Comics, Dan Jurgens. The guy who's better than Dan, he's an artist. Oh, crap. Who was, like, the main Batman guy in the 90s?
Jurgens wrote stuff. Jurgens, to me, is, like, Booster Gold. I'm trying to think, like, who...
Oh, man, I can't believe... he was, like, my favorite... Oh, I'll figure it out while we talk to Chris Barrett. Chris, you know, you and I was up in Brooklyn last week, and you and I went to a record store called The Thing. Probably the most unique record store I've ever seen, and I don't mean that in a good way, but I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way either. Chris, why don't you tell the readers about this record store called The Thing in Brooklyn?
Well, I know it was on a list.
Chuck Dixon.
Okay.
right in the nick of time. I think it was on a BuzzFeed list because, you know, BuzzFeed has those lists. Like, they tell you what to do. 9 places to go before you die, 10 things to eat before you die. So apparently I think they made a list for record stores saying that The Thing is one of the record stores they must visit. And you walk in and it's a secondhand shop and there's crap everywhere. It's just all over the place. And then you get to the back room. And there's just crates and crates and crates of vinyl and just stacked towards the ceiling. And then you turn around, there's stairs, and you go down the stairs, and it's a real low ceiling. I'm 6'1", so I almost smacked it six times that I went up and down. And then there's just all underneath the store, a basement full of crates of vinyl. And I think you could sift through about one third of it, because the rest of the aisles are just clogged with crates that you can't touch.
If you touch it, you might
collapse.
I would say one tenth of it. Adam, imagine a two-car garage that's about three times as deep as a two-car garage, and you can only walk up to the first 15 feet, the first 10 feet, because the rest is literally a solid wall of crates, followed by crates, followed by crates of records. But I mean, honestly, a lot of it is junk records, but it's insane. I mean, Chris, how many records do you think were there? 400,000?
I'm scared to put a number on it, because it almost seems infinite. It really felt infinite.
Yeah,
I never said that about anything. But that,
you know, I'm looking at this in Google image search right now, and it's sort of maddening, the amount and how it's stacked, and just wow, yeah.
It's like watching an episode of Hoarders, but in the store, and it's just like you want to yell at the person. You're so frustrated. You're like, I just want to see what you have, but you can't, because you can't walk into the back to check the rest of the crates. I don't know. How did it make the BuzzFeed list, by the way? Because it is a true record dig, but there's just so much you can't access.
I'm looking at pictures online here, and the pictures really don't even – it's way messier than the pictures. I mean, I don't know – I think the place is beyond redemption. I don't think there's any way to straighten it up without just getting rid of all the stock. Like, all
right, I've got to give Pitchfork some credit here. They say the thing is a giant black hole sucking in excess Phil Collins records at the speed the human eye can't follow.
True. But actually, if you look really hard, and I don't know. I mean, I know I'm a record collector, so I like these stories. Do you think listeners like to hear our record adventures, our record scoring adventures? Well,
who cares if they
listen?
I don't think it would help. I think it helped.
You can write us at podcast@punknews.org with your own record adventures, but I'm just going to wrap with the thing is they got tons and tons of crap. A lot of like really shitty like 90s, like late 90s singles that nobody wants, 12-inch singles. But deep, like Barty and Ed, there are gems. I got a super rare Pablo Moses record that's a reggae guy. What else did I get? I got a rare Rolling Stones promo 12-inch, which is insane. But I also got – well, actually, they had Afrika Bambaataa's second 12-inch single. And he looks so badass on it. He's got, like, glasses on. He looks just, like, such a G. But it didn't have the record. So it was, like – it was such a taunting. I felt like King Tantalus.
It just felt like you picked it up and it's there, but it's not. It's like there's something missing. Oh, the record. I need that. So yeah, my wife mostly picked up some pop records. I wasn't able to really find but there was just so much you didn't know where to start. I'd start with a shelf, and it's like it felt like so much work. That's just what it felt like. It felt like too much work.
Chris, do you think we saw 1% of the records there?
Pulling it out, I don't think I even pulled out 1% of the records. No,
yeah.
I don't.
Insane. Adam is like, it's insane, but like not even a good way. It's such a mess. It's like not even fun, you know. It's like going through a dead relative's garage is what it's like, you know. So there's some morbid imagery for you. But on today's Punk News podcast, we got a pretty action packed episode. We got some important stuff to talk about, some not so important stuff to talk about. So we're going to keep it pretty loose. We're going to talk about Lawrence Arms signing the Epitaph. We're going to be talking about the continuing saga of Pussy Riot, which, not to make light of it, but it's almost like a movie, like the way this whole Pussy Riot thing keeps developing, you know. We're going to be talking about Cerebral Palsy. We're going to be talking about the new Slim Dunlap benefit compilation. We're going to be talking about Less Than Jake, which I know a lot of you Scott kids are like excited about out there. We're going to be talking about Teenage Bottle Rocket. We're going to be talking about the Melvins. And other than that, we might be talking about a few other things if we have time. Just a couple of things before we got kicked off. I think Adam White's going to play some tunes for us. We'll see what he pulls out of his. Adam, have you brought your magical bag of surprise tunes with you today?
I have. Yeah. I'll figure this out by the time you actually want something from it.
Well, very good. I'm going to go off on a rant here, and I'm interested in listening to the kids' responses. That's podcast@punknews.org or johng@punknews.org. It is for a little while now, and I'm not going to name which one, but for a while we've been doing like a series called Rad Women Who Make Rad Art, and it's about just that. It's about women in the arts that make cool art that we think is cool art. So we interview them, and I'm like, a lot of these young ladies in the comment section get like an insane amount of hate. Like they say, like, this person is an idiot. This person's stupid. You know, this person has no idea what you're talking about. And you read these young ladies, they're all eloquent and they know what they're talking about. Like they might be saying some pretty radical things, but it doesn't mean they don't know what they're talking about. It just means they're saying unusual concepts or arguments. I mean, I don't agree with everything they say, but I'm just curious as to like why it angers people or causes so much vitriol. Like how can just reading an artist's opinion of things make someone so angry that they sign into a website and just like spew out hatred and anger? Like, is it because these people have nothing to do and they're just bored? Is it because they really, really disagree with somebody and they don't really know how to express it? Or what would cause – and I don't mean to attack these people. I'm interested from a psychological standpoint. What causes somebody to, like, get so angry at just a discussion about art to sign in and personally attack somebody and try to dehumanize them? Like, what causes that? Is it insecurity? Is it an overabundance of confidence? What is it? I don't think it's just trolling, though, because trolling suggests that the person isn't really serious and they're just trying to cause a reaction. Well, I think some of these people genuinely feel what they're trying to express.
I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic because I always feel like when it comes to women with art and music, and maybe sometimes they say different things that aren't popular. I don't know. I mean, I really can't put my finger on it because they just feel like, I don't know. Some people feel like women don't have a place for that.
It's not just women, though. Like, I'm just using women as an example because there is a minority of women in music and particularly punk rock. That's an easy platform to attack. But I could get, say, I don't know, say a black punk rock guy, right? And he could be talking about, you know, like as an African American in punk rock, and people could be saying that guy has no idea what, like they could attack that. You know what I mean? Or I could just get like just a normal person, and I say to the person, you know, do you like pop punk? And the person might say, I don't like pop punk. I like thrash. You know, and then people will be like, this person's an effing idiot. They don't like pop punk. What a jackass! You're an idiot. Like what would cause somebody just to get so angry over something like that?
Some people can't accept that different people are into different things and have different opinions. It's a good thing that, you know, feel differently about other things. Gives a new idea, a fresh perspective on things.
So you think because we have societal norms, they would never say that in real life, but because they aren't hindered by physical threat or physical intimidation, they're expressing what they deep down really do want to express.
I do feel on the internet people are more likely to express it. I mean, in person, it just depends on the situation. I mean, I've heard some stuff one-on-one from people that's like, all right, yeah, whatever, guy, you know? So, I mean, definitely on the internet, yeah, I don't know, people reach a new level of bolt sometimes, you know? It's unfortunate.
God, you guys run around too much during the fully anonymous punk news commenting day.
Oh, I was, but honestly, it seemed less tactical then. Like, back then, people would just, like let's say I interviewed Black Dahlia. I'll just use him as an example, because I like Black Dahlia a lot. Somebody might call him, like Black Dahlia is an idiot, and they would just say that, you know? But now it seems that people really dig into it more and, like, will Google the person and research the person and write a poorly formed but heavily researched essay about why they hate somebody, you know?
Wildly unpopular.
And it makes you wonder if the fact that they are slightly less anonymous, and I mean, it's not like we take people's, you know, driver's licenses to post on punk news or anything like that, but the fact that you're at least using an account, and you may intend to use that account in the future, instead of being completely flippant, you try to back up your, you know, crackpot opinion with some hasty Google research. That may be a symptom of what you're seeing. I don't know. This is a human nature thing that we've been dealing with on the internet forever, where, and it always, especially someone that ends up writing a lot of these stories, it ends up being the one that you care about is the one that the dicks seem to come out on. So, I got to imagine you're feeling that with this article.
I do, because like you know, some people you interview, they're kind of cocky, they're kind of mean, and some people you interview, you can just tell they're nice, delightful people, you know, and these little goblins come out of the woodwork and just attack viciously. So like, it's like you're attacking a nice person that really doesn't like have any hatred. Like, why are you being so vicious? I just don't understand it. I would love to interview, genuinely interview these little hobgoblins, like, without judgment, and really try to understand who they are, just out of pure curiosity, you know?
Yeah, you could do it, we'll do it live with that.
we should. Adam, is your bag of holding sufficiently magically prepped?
Sure. All right. Let's. We're gonna do a sampler of stuff here from that I can get quickly and for free on the internet, and quasi legally where no one's gonna give a shit because that's the way we roll here. So,
I got some discount. I'm selling my laptop. You can PayPal me some money if you want to buy my laptop. Fuck these listeners.
Yeah, so we're gonna play a sampler of stuff for you, at least at this moment. I may change my mind on this midway through the show, from the Deranged Records 2013 sampler they released just today, I think, or just in the last few days. So you can grab this whole thing on Bandcamp. It's 15 tracks of all the various crazy stuff that Deranged puts out. Deranged, if you guys don't know about it, is a Canadian label. They had put out all kinds of really, I want to say, like, punk rock that tends towards some of the darker, recesses of the genre. They're not a friendly, touchy feely sort of label. They're not necessarily a hardcore label, or anything. So I don't want to put that across. But you know what? If there's a band that's out there that's playing, you know, slightly off kilter, you know, death rock and used punk, then this is quite possibly where you're going to find it. So let's just jump right into this thing and play some stuff from a few of the bands. We're going to play a song by a band called Voigtkampf, which, if you guys know your Blade Runner, you know that's where that comes from. The song is called Paranoid Visions. This is the first track on the Deranged sampler. I'm not even going to give you their bio because I don't entirely know it. I know they're from the Midwest. So, but check this out. This is pretty indicative of what, I mean, if you could say there is a deranged sound, this is, this would cover a good slice of it. So this is Voigtkampf with Paranoid Visions.
Paranoid Visions. I was getting pretty paranoid, I gotta say. I was getting scared, but I enjoyed that track. Like I said, Deranged Records, pretty good record label. I dig their jams.
You know what? Deranged has put out so much stuff that has just become like a springboard for a band that I learned about like way after they were on Deranged and now incredibly like, or you know, Deranged put out stuff. They put out stuff for Career Suicide. They put out a bunch of early Fucked Up stuff. I mean, Deranged has been behind, or, you know, they've got the White Lung records, lots of cool stuff.
True that. Speaking of things that people are getting excited about, this is a biggie. This is a biggie. Lawrence Arms have signed to, wait for it, Epitaph Records for their highly anticipated new album. Here's what Brendan Kelly of the Lawrence Arms said about the new Lawrence Arms record coming out on Epitaph. He said, "We went and met Epitaph in L.A. We had some laughs and some grilled cheese. We then talked to Brett Grawitz underneath the original painting of the Against the Grain cover. Awesome. And we thought, what better way to come back from a long break than on the label that put out most of the records that got us into punk rock in the first place?" So I know a lot of people are excited about this record. I don't know if you two guys are Lawrence Arms fans, but this is one of the most anticipated punk rock records in a long while.
I am. I'm most definitely a Lawrence Arms fan. And, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, it's not going to change the creative content of the music, but I noticed that a lot of the jokes were, you know, when they're going to open up for, like, I forgot what are those bad bands on Epitaph, like Parkway Drive and a few other bands.
Oh, yeah, Falling in Reverse.
Oh, God. I mean, there are some awful bands on that label, but they've had a history of putting out some pretty good music that I liked and some other people liked, I think. So, I mean, I don't see an issue. I don't see how – I saw those, oh, it was a slap in the face to Fat Wreck. I don't see how that is either. I mean, you know, they still have a good relationship with, you know, Asian Man and Toby from Red Scare and other people. I mean, they just kind of just do their own thing and I guess wanted to try something different. So I'm just excited to hear some new tunes because I really like the last 7-inch that they put out. They're a band that, in my opinion, has gotten better over time. And hopefully they could top a bunch of other stuff they put out. And that's debatable, too, because some people will be like, ugh, they haven't put out anything good since Asian Man, or, ugh, they kind of lost their way, you know, sometime along when they were on Fat. So, but I'm pretty excited to hear whatever they're going to put out. And, yeah, I just am wondering what they're going to title it. That's the real question.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that seems bad about this to me. you figure that you know, some questionable, okay, well, a lot of questionable bands that are on modern day Epitaph aside, you figure given the years they've been around and the kind of stuff they've been involved in, that, you know what, Epitaph and Fat probably have around the same amount of skeletons locked away in their closet. So I'm sure that when it really comes down to it, one is no less super evil than the other. It's not, you know, it's not that Lawrence Arms went and signed to, like, fuck, I don't even know. Who's the derided record label
Victory.
These days?
Victory.
Victory. Victory, yeah, okay.
Oh, man. And Chicago, too. Right? Chicago connection there.
And it's... If anything, whenever we have one of these stories where some band that we would not necessarily have thought of as a modern Epitaph band signs to modern Epitaph, I think it just further sort of drives home what a weird egg the modern Epitaph is. And because all these bands that we would consider, I think, more traditional punk bands that end up on Epitaph, whether it's, you know, it's Lawrence Arms or Propagandi or Off Their Heads or, you know, anything like that, that's a thing, like something that like the punk dudes audience would just be into. All those bands are signing to Epitaph, not necessarily so much based on what Epitaph is, but based on a lot of nostalgia, I think, for what Epitaph was, based on the fact that, you know what, there's good people there. They like, you know, there's good staff. They like Brett. He runs a good ship. There's, you know, it's a good running operation, but, you know, these bands are signing and saying things like Lawrence Arms did, where like, man, you know, Epitaph put out some of our favorite records ever, which is really, I think, what you'd get from a lot of people from like my age that were into Epitaph in the 90s and everything was like, yeah, Epitaph put out some of our favorite records ever. You know, that was a soundtrack to like a whole, you know, like my whole high school years was Epitaph and Fat stuff. And like a lot of people my age were. And it's weird to hear like every band that ends up signing up with Epitaph these days, you know, reiterating that like, you know, they're there because, like, oh, this is cool because, like, man, think about what Epitaph was.
Is it me, though, or is there some, like, I feel like there's some weird parallel to Rise Records because Rise has been signing, not exactly, I mean, I don't know if you could say, like, Lawrence Arms or Propaganda. Obviously, they haven't signed to Rise, but I'm just talking about, like, bands that people on Punk News would be really interested in, like Polar Bear Club and Dave House. And but Rise has put out way more questionable records than Epitaph has and doesn't quite have the history that that people are attached to that Epitaph has. But I feel like there's almost like something going on between those two labels where they're both kind of just grabbing bands who are established and been around for a while or haven't done anything for a little bit or who are on the uprise like Dave House. And really just, I don't know if it's trying to grab attention because you know, some people have, like I said, have signed the Rise and people are like, why Rise, you know? And it's been a trend for the, I guess what really set it was when Hot Water Music signed the Rise and people were flipping out about that. And then they put out an album that, I mean, it sounded like Hot Water Music to me. It wasn't really a whole lot different, but I just feel so there's some type of, I don't think there's a competition, but there's just some weird parallel going on now.
I guess like there's the mirror thing that happened, right? Like Rise put out like a lot of like questionable shit. And then they signed a lot of really good bands. Epitaph had a lot of really good bands and they signed a lot of questionable shit. I don't know.
The questionable shit started to really sell. So that, I mean, that's what Rise built on. And I guess Epitaph is trying to maintain. So let's put out a bunch of whatever. Whatever core, as I should know it as.
Honestly, what the Lawrence Arms statement there reminds me of a lot was, and I don't remember if you guys remembered like the kind of statements that that Against Me and Rancid put out when they hooked back up with Warner, because when they hooked back up with Warner, they didn't just like sign to Warner Brothers; they signed to Sire, right? So Warner went and resurrected this like legendary label, this label that was responsible for releasing stuff from, you know, from the Ramones, from Richard Hell, and the Smiths, and the Replacements, and like a whole bunch of bands are on Sire. So when Against Me, you know, went to the major for New Wave, they didn't have a Warner label on the back; they had a Sire thing. And there was like a lot of talk at the time, like yeah, we're on Sire. This is amazing. There's some history here, and that's what I feel like a lot of these bands sign up at these days. I mean, not to disparage, you know, Epitaph, because I'm sure they're still good at what they do and good people and they've got like the right motivations and everything, but that's what I hear from all the bands is that like, man, think about what Epitaph, you know, meant to us when we were kids.
I don't know, it almost sounds like with some of those statements like it's a guy like I'll scratch your back, you know, make Epitaph relevant again to some people that it wasn't relevant to for a while. I mean, I don't think it's exactly like that, but it almost seems that there's an element to that, there's something like that going on. But I mean, I don't know, I mean, that's just my speculation, conjecture, and whatever, but
yeah, I mean, like I can't argue with the economic argument that I've heard about why Epitaph works the way that they do, only because I have no proof one way or the other, but it sounds entirely reasonable to me, which is that, you know, the record business sucks. It's hard to make money in that business at all. If you want to run something that is kind of the size of what Epitaph is and that has like the reach and the distribution and the channels that Epitaph has open to them, well, then that means, you know, if you're going to release, you know, a bunch of weird records from the Locust, then you also have to release, you know, Falling in Reverse to pay for that.
And yeah,
I guess, I mean, it sucks to you know, to go, okay, I guess that's the compromise that you have to make, because I'm sure there's like, you know, 20 different examples of labels that don't make that compromise. But, you know, those labels aren't the size of Epitaph. They don't carry the, you know, the industry oomph of Epitaph. So I guess that's maybe what you got to do.
I'll tell you two labels that did not make that compromise. Two of my all-time favorite labels, Alternative Tentacles, which on average I think might be the greatest record label ever, like as the quality of albums put out, is that they never put out music that they thought was whack or was intended to sell. And you know what? Alternative Tentacles is hurting. Jello Biafra has been quite clear. The past few years they've not been making money, they've been losing money. So it just goes, if you want to be a record label and put out cool records, and if you want to actually make money, maybe you have to put out whack records.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it's a necessary evil. And I mean, as much people want to complain, it really is a necessary evil. It's unfortunate. I mean, because I know some other small labels who are putting out stuff that they really like, but you know, not everybody has money to throw away, but they really, it's really a labor of love, but you are losing money on stuff you really believe in, and they could put out something that's awful to people who like some sort of purity in music, and you just kind of got to deal with it, unfortunately.
What's the other label?
Oh, SST, who put out a lot of whack records. That, see, SST's mistake is they put out whack records, but they were whack records no one wanted, as opposed to whack records a lot of people wanted. And so that's why they basically lost all their money in the late 80s and early 90s. But I want to mention this real quick, and then we can move on. Is, you know, a couple people are like, this is a slap in the face to Fat Records. Well, that's an entirely uninformed opinion. A, maybe Fat Records didn't want to work with them. B, maybe Fat Records didn't have the capital to do what they wanted and said, well, you should go somewhere else. C, I mean, bands aren't, you know, like, people want bands to be, like they want the record label to be a pimp, you know, and like... Just because you like, if Fat wanted Lawrence Arms for more than one album or whatever, they would have signed him for more than one. You know, they would have signed him for a multiple album deal, but they didn't want to. You know, so you can't take that personal. It just, it's business. You know, and a band owes no obligation to a label beyond what they've contracted to. For some reason, I guess it's because people have such fond memories of like the late 80s and early 90s when so many labels were putting out so many good records. They're like, well, I remember like when Green Day left Lookout, people were like, well, how could Green Day leave Lookout even though Lookout wasn't paying them? Well, why shouldn't they? Like, a band owes a record label nothing. It's the label that owes the band something, you know? The band is making the record label money, not vice versa. So a band owes a label absolutely nothing beyond what they've contracted to. So once a band has fulfilled its contract to say that they owed the label, well, that's stupid. It's up the label to court the band, not vice versa, you know?
I don't think there's any animosity, you know.
I don't think there's – honestly, I think Fat Mike is a pretty smart businessman, and I think he's a pretty easygoing businessman, and that I think he's smart enough to say, you know, somebody don't work with me this time, I'm not going to get upset, you know. It'll come back around again because – as I've learned, you know, in the past couple of years, the music world really is an extremely small universe. So things come back around all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I guess we're moving on.
Are we?
Yeah.
Take it away, Adam. Take it away.
Segue. Oh, thank God, that was my segue.
Yeah.
Oh shit. All right. Sorry.
I will say the word segue. Okay.
If you could ring a bell.
From now on, Chris, you will say we are now entering our segue. You know, so we know.
Yeah. All right. It's
segue. Segue.
Moving on to Pussy Riot.
Yeah. All right. So. There's a little bit of an update to the story since we posted it, but I'll go through the one that we posted first. So, Pussy Riot member, now I'm going to totally screw this up. Nadzita, you want to do that?
It sounds about right.
Yeah. Tolokanova.
Nadezhda. Just call her Nadezhda. No, I'm serious. I worked in a Russian community. Her name is definitely Nadezhda.
Nadezhda. Okay, cool. Yeah. She's the member of Pussy Riot that was in prison still. She has been missing since an October 21st prison transfer. BuzzFeed spoke with her father, who said he hadn't heard from his daughter or had been informed about her whereabouts. So the family did not know where they went. The transfer came in the wake of a 9-day hunger strike, which was in protest over working conditions at the prison camp where she had been incarcerated. And a fellow passenger had spotted her on a train in the mountains on October 24th, and that was about it. No one really knew where she was or where she was going. So that was kind of where the story was left. Now, it was both the individual I'm talking about, who's Russian, and fellow Pussy Riot member, Maria Alekhina? Sure.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Alekhina,
yeah.
All right. They are due to be released from prison in March of 2014 following a 2-year sentence for hooliganism motivated by religious hatred. This was for kind of like an art punk project performance that they did in a Russian Orthodox church. So the update to the story that we've that has kind of come up since is that, although the source is a little bit iffy, is that her husband has learned from someone or other that she's actually at a prison camp in Siberia now, but they don't know which prison camp in Siberia. So this isn't, I guess, 100% confirmed, but that's what they're going on. So now the family has got to try to figure out where she has been moved and to try to find her and communicate with her again. So, this one's going to kind of be up in the air. There may be new developments on this by the time the podcast gets posted, but you know, further drama in the Pussy Riot story.
Yeah, I think it's indicative, not to get all in a boring political tangent, but I think it's really indicative of the Russia that's forming now. I mean, we moved away from the Soviet Union, where it's state control of everything in a command economy, to like a pure capitalism economy. They have a flat tax because there's a popular, well, not popular, there's an uber rich French person that defected to Russia because of their flat tax, because France has a bunch of new crazy taxes against the rich. And it's really indicative of what's going on politically in Russia, in terms of, you know, Putin is president again. I mean, he kind of stepped aside for 6 years and was prime minister. Now he's president, and really iron fisted, former head of KGB. For those who are too young to remember, the head of the secret service in Russia, basically it spied on their own people and abroad. And it's just really crazy in terms of them having the Olympics and moving forward in the 21st century on a government that really is trying to clamp down on dissent to the utmost extreme. I mean, for 2 years, for basically jumping in a church, and now sending her to a prison camp in Siberia without any notice or due process, which they don't ever have in Russia. It's really kind of crazy and scary, and it makes you think beyond the punk realm in terms of what you really can do and say in Russia. It's nuts. I don't know if I think, John, you have any more to elaborate on that? Or
no, the only thing I really have to say about it is that, A, I hope this girl gets out of this okay, because honestly, at this point, she might wind up disappearing, and they might say, oh, she, quote, suicided in prison, you know? And how do you prove that that's a lie, you know? Second is hopefully this will bring, you know, more awareness to the situation. I would say that Russia is really botching their PR on this, but I don't think they care. Like, I think they're happy to be, like, the country that makes people disappear and shuts up people that exercise speech. I think they're glad to be that. So the point what I think we as North Americans can take from this is how valuable free speech is, and that this is me speaking personally, is that just because someone disagrees with you or says something that you don't agree with or says something you think is morally wrong, doesn't mean they shouldn't be able to say it and you shouldn't try to silence them. And I think this just proves how important free speech is. And I really hope this girl gets out of this okay. And the other girl too, you know, or I should say young lady. This is crazy, you know. People just disappearing for 10 days and they're like, oh, she's in Siberia, you know, 3,000 miles away where there's no one at all. But don't worry, you know, we've got her working in a sewing shop 18 hours a day. Don't worry, guy. You know, relax, friends. So.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, and you think about, I mean, not to knock any protest groups here, because, you know, I totally understand we have a right to free speech. People get arrested for night, maybe complain about that and mistreatment. I mean, this is mistreatment. This is two years for basically running in a church, and you know, now you're sent to Siberia.
Siberia.
Yeah, cold and basically a prison camp. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else really to say to that other than that's really unfortunate. And I hope better for it. I mean, I'm glad Russia is botching PR on this, especially since it's around the Olympics is coming up in a few months. I'm kind of glad they are botching
PR. I don't think they care, though. Do you think they care?
I mean, they've also had a big campaign against homosexuality, too, because there was some controversy with some gay athletes coming in. If they could be gay, but they can't propagandize about being gay. They can't go out and speak publicly about it, which is nuts if you consider that, you know, you're going to have the whole world watching in a few months. I mean, what are you trying to do?
It's important to mention that we're referring to the Russian government, not the Russian people, obviously.
Yes, the Russian government and whatever. Yeah, definitely.
Right. Well, in zanier news, Cerebral Ballsy just released a new song. It's off their 7-inch single, and it is called City's Girl. They've got a video to go along with it, and it features a quick appearance from The Strokes' Julian Casablancas. I just saw, believe it or not, Cerebral Ballsy open for Flag about 3 weeks ago, and I didn't hate it. I thought it was adequate. You know, I mean, it wasn't mind-blowing, but it was kind of just, you know, classic late 70s harder punk rock, L.A. style. Fun fact, I'm going to test you two guys' knowledge. The lead singer of Cerebral Ballsy, his name is Honor Titus. Who is he related to in the music world?
Got me.
I have no idea.
He is the son of Drez Titus of Black Sheep. You can go with this, or you can go with that. You can go with this, or you can go with that. I think he'll go with this, because that is kind of whack. That's his son.
Wow, it's
funny, because if you type Honor Titus into Google, the suggested search is Honor Titus dad, so other people have asked this question.
I mean, I watched the video. I'm just going to try to say it in the most respectful way possible. Sometimes I just feel like bands just try too hard, and that is how I felt about that video.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
You know, yeah, it doesn't really blow into my sails either, but I guess it does for some people. So
this band really, this song at least, maybe it's not the band, I've never really heard them outside of this song. It just sort of sounds like not the Spits. Like there's like a Spits vibe going on here, but I would sort of rather listen to the Spits.
Adam, don't even, there was like crazy hype about this band like 2 years ago. You remember that?
I don't. I honestly do not recall ever hearing about this band until this story came up.
Oh, it was crazy. I guess either 1 year or 2 years ago, there was an insane amount of hype about this band because a lot of people say they weren't like true punk, but for some reason they were like on tour with Off and a whole bunch of other bands, and they were on all these pretty big build, pretty highly built punk rock shows. I think Adult Swim put out their first record, so they're still a mystery. They're still a mystery, I guess. But if anything, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the band or anything, but the mere fact that they're still around after the hype has died down, I think goes to show that at least they're in it to actually put out the music and not for, I don't know, other reasons.
I think there is nothing that like kneecaps your credibility at being a valid punk band more than someone in the band having a rich dad. That seems to be like the death knell of any kind of like online credibility. Cause there are people saying it about this band, and I was like looking it up in the various punk news comments about, you know, oh yeah, you know, trust fund people, you know, they're, you know, guys in this band, you know, come from fame. They come from like having a background in music, and that's how they got to where they are. That's the same thing people were saying about like Be Your Own Pet when they came out, where, you know, oh yeah, you know, but what no one really knows, this band just shot out of nowhere because like the singer's dad is a record executive, or like, I didn't remember what the story was, but man, if you just want to like, you know, screw your chances of having any like real credibility in the punk rock echo chamber, like have a famous dad. That'll do it.
See, I screw my credibility by not agreeing with what everyone else says and disagreeing with what everyone else disagrees with as well. That's how I screw my credibility.
Who needs credibility?
Yeah.
Credibility anti-punk rock? That's what I heard. The internet told me.
Well, I guess, Adam, you want to keep this train rolling?
Segway. Sure. All right, let's talk about a benefit compilation here. So, a benefit comp that is raising money for Slim Dunlop of the Replacements has for the Songs for Slim project has been released, or is it being? No, it is being released by a New West record. So, Songs for Slim Rockin' Here Tonight, a benefit compilation for Slim Dunlop, is going to arrive on November 11th in 2013. It features Busted Up by the Replacements, which appeared on the Songs for Slim EP that they released earlier this year. It'll also feature a bunch of other stuff that is probably going to be of interest to a lot of our listeners. It features new music from Matt's drummer Chris Mars. It's got stuff from John Doe of X, Craig Finn of the Hold Steady, Frank Black of the Pixies, stuff from Lucero. Who else is on here?
Soul Lots Asylum. Of stuff.
Soul Asylum. Yeah, there you go. Jeff Tweedy. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's on here. So, anyways, just like Songs for Slim, this will benefit Replacements guitarist Slim Dunlop, who suffered a debilitating stroke. Wow, I can't talk. In February of 2012, So yeah, so there you go. This sucker will come out on November 11th. The Songs for Slim project has raised over $200,000 for the Dunlop and his family already. So yeah, so there's lots of stuff that we've posted about this. You've got the cover art, track listing for the first disc, and a unreleased bonus track, disc 2. So you should check out all that stuff at Punk News right now. I don't know. Any thoughts about this?
It seemed like a good enough cause. I wish him the best of luck. What else can I say? You know?
Yeah, John, why do you keep reading my mind, man? Come on.
I think it's a bad this idea. Isn't I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
Why do we raise money for people who need it?
They're all idiots. They're idiots.
They don't need it. I need it. Right? No, I agree. I think it's a good cause. Obviously, a well-loved person and a respected band. And why not? Sounds like fun. Sounds like a great way to raise money. Get some good music out of the way. And yeah, why not? Let's go for it. Get some credibility.
Just keep shouting.
Loud noises.
Adam, do you have another song in your bag of holding?
Oh, I do. So this song, this goes out to my countrymen, my brother in arms, my buddy, Mr. Rob Ford. This is a song called My Toronto by the band Wastoids, which is a band from Toronto, which is going to play, I'm going to say like 80s Boston kind of oi style stuff. So this goes out to Rob Ford and all his troubles from the Bug News podcast.
Light one up, Robbie. Podcast, and we're gonna rip through this pretty quickly. Less Than Jake is putting out a new album, and they have a new song out, and it's called "Give Me Something to Believe In." Adam, we talked about ska last week, and I gotta say, going off the comments, people still love the ska. I mean, people might diss on it, people might say the third wave is long since passed, but people are still drinking up the ska, the juicy ska beats.
They are. That sounded really gross. I don't want to take too much about like I don't know, to read too much into the genre necessarily by what Less Than Jake are putting out here, because if anything, this is a perfectly serviceable and, you know, perfectly pleasurable Less Than Jake tune. It actually reminds me a little bit of the Planet Smashers at times, but yeah, it's a, you know, it is a, you know, by the numbers kind of third wave ska track. And it suffers maybe a little bit from the fact just that, you know, a band like Less Than Jake has been around for a while. So, you know, they're doing what they know how to do, but there's not necessarily any sense of, you know, young, hungry urgency to what they're doing. But hey, it's, you know, if you like this band, it's a good track from them in the style of shit that they do.
You know,
that was
I saw...
super diplomatic, wasn't it? I thought that was diplomatic.
I think kind of diplomatic. I saw Less Than Jake, I think, I'm trying to remember if it was 2011 or 2012 in Boston or Cambridge. I'm sorry. And I wasn't there to see them, to be perfectly honest. I was there to see another band. But I stayed for Less Than Jake. I was there to see Wellham Scream. And I stayed for Less Than Jake. And, you know, I'm not much of a ska fan anymore. I mean, it was a point in my life, I guess when I was like 16, there were local ska acts I was more into. I never got into like the big ska bands. There's a few local bands in the New York area that I was kind of into, and that was pretty much it. It's just something I wanted to go to shows and dance around and whatever and act like an idiot.
Is that when you had your afro?
You know what? Yeah, actually, there was still a point where I had the afro and I was in the
pit. I would imagine you skanking the pit with a gigantic afro. Pick it up.
I never got the afro gigantic. I got it to a point where it's like, oh, dude, afro, let me touch it. Oh, it feels like a sheep. I did enjoy Scott at one point, and they still do put on a fun show. You know, I mean, it's fun for everybody. Fun Scott, I guess they go hand in hand, right? But yeah, this is pretty much just more the same from Less Than Jake. And those who are really holding on will enjoy it, and those who hate Scott will hate it. So, truth, right? Segue.
Speaking of a band that almost all the punk news listeners love, Teenage Bottle Rocket has released a new song. I guess they're not quite as crazily hyped as they were a little while ago, but still, I think Teenage Bottle Rocket is still extremely popular with the punk news. For a while, Teenage Bottle Rocket, it was like the second coming of Jesus. But they've got a new 7-inch coming out. It's called American Deutschbag. So it's a pun on douchebag. And it's coming out on Fat Records. And the first track is I'm the One Smoking Marijuana, Mother Effer. Do you guys like Teenage Bottle Rocket? And did you like this tune?
Yes, no.
Yeah, I'm a Teenage Bottle Rocket fan too. And yeah, they played it live. And Adam, have you seen Teenage Bottle Rocket live in the last year?
Maybe at the beginning, it's been at least a year.
Because I've seen them a few times. They've been touring a lot in the past year since Freak Out, and so I think I've seen them like 3 or 4 times in different cities also. And they played this song for the better part of those times, and so it's no surprise that they released this one. And Ray seemed really into it and really into playing it, and they played it faster than they recorded it, in my opinion. And had some energy live, but it was kind of like, all right, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't have written a song about it. I'm not exactly a marijuana lover. I don't have anything against it either. But, whatever. I mean, I just kind of shrugged my shoulders at that one. I'll be more excited for other stuff, maybe. So,
I'm just trying to think here. Like, it's a Dazed and Confused quote, isn't it? Or something like that.
I don't know, Adam. I don't do drugs.
Okay, well,
I just say no, Adam. Maybe you should try sometime.
You should try some drugs, John.
Again, all of my political role models up here are smoking crack, so I don't know what the I just don't think it's really all that good a song. I mean, like, and I guess that's, and maybe it's the recording. Maybe it comes off better. Like, I don't think I've heard it played live, so maybe it comes off differently there. But it's, I mean, it. Yeah, I guess it's okay as like the B-side to a 7-inch that I'm hoping has a much better A-side, but this is a band that usually doesn't fail to, you know, hook me with whatever they're doing. Like they you know, usually their worst songs I'm still super into is because the style of music that they play, that kind of like Ramones core stuff, is just, you know, it worked for me. But this just doesn't strike me as all that good, and I haven't entirely come to terms with why. I don't think it is.
I am correct in stating that for a while Teenage Bottle Rocket was the punk news band, correct?
It was really hard to find anyone that had a problem with anything that they did.
The glory days pass at punk news for Teenage Bottle Rocket.
Every band's allowed to swing and miss. So I think we could say that this is a swing and a miss.
Not that the song is bad. You know, we've seen this happen time and time again. For a while, bands are upcoming. And then people are like, oh, it's the greatest band ever. And then slowly by slowly, some of the people turn and some of the people stay true. For a while, everyone was like, Gaslight Anthem is the best band ever. Now they get almost more hatred than love. Same with Against Me prior to about 2 years ago.
I think a big part of that is that
I'll pause and then I'll continue, Adam. Masked Intruder right now are bathing in their golden sunshine.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think the difference is that you look at a band like Gaslight and there's a certain, and they bring this upon themselves, they invite a certain amount of of importance about them. You know, they're playing music that is, you know, so strongly tied to, you know, a certain set of influences that I won't bother mentioning, that really, really, really invites, you know, their fan base to go over the top with how important and how meaningful they were. And then you look at Against Me fucking like managed to capture like the zeitgeist and like all of the anxieties of the late 90s punk rock, early 2000s punk rock movement in general, where we were all basically like vicariously living out our various anxieties about like, you know, what was punk and were we selling out or anything through what Against Me was doing. So there was like, you know, those were bands that had so much hype and importance on them that they could not possibly maintain that level of adoration. Like, just by the nature of what they were doing, people had to get pissed off at them at some point. Teenage Bottle Rocket, I love them, but they have a mode that they play, and like, we're gonna get out there, we're gonna play like 2-minute Ramones chord songs, and it's gonna be awesome. And that's what they do. And they're not saying anything, and they're not doing anything particularly important, but sort of by design. So it'd be really easy to me for them to just kind of go from album to album to album doing the exact same thing, and the people that are into that style are just gonna be like, yeah, bring it on more, right? You know, it's kind of the way that, you know, shit, people listen to Ramones records, or how, like, you know, John listens to Off, where they could do the same. that wasn't true. You know, you could take that formula that works and keep going with it, you know, into the horizon and never stop. And
indefinitely.
Teenage Bottle Rocket could totally do that. So I'm going to say this is a swing and the miss, and it's not like a, you know, bloom is off the rose sort of thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're on the downward trend. I just say that, you know, I mean, it's a 7-inch, so there's not many songs on the 7-inch to choose from, so they put out the one that they liked, and not everybody likes it, so that happens. And I don't think they haven't strayed from their MO like the other aforementioned bands, so, and there wasn't like the signing to a label that they shouldn't have signed to that they had to deal with. I mean, they're pretty much just consistently doing the same thing, so, you know, a little something different.
Well, speaking of a band that is not doing the same thing, the Melvins have released a new album, and you can stream it online. The album is called Tres Cabrones, which is either translated as Three Badasses or Three Dumbasses, and is in their Melvins 1983 incarnation, which features original Melvin, Buzz Osborne on guitar, almost original Melvin, Dale Crover on bass, and original Melvins drummer Mike Dillard on drums. I've heard the new album. Tres Cabrones is actually a compilation, because the Melvins put out like 3 singles where most of these tracks are drawn from. But the new album is great. It's Melvins being Melvins, but the Melvins are never quite the Melvins. There's always something different about them. This album features them a little leaner, a little harder, a little rougher, but always experimental. But this is one of their not quite as experimental releases as, say, like Pigs of the Roman Empire. But, I mean, if you're a Melvins fan, you're going to love it. If you don't know anything about the Melvins, pretty good place to jump in. I love the album. Huge Melvins fan. And the Melvins are consistently fascinating because they've got a huge volume of work. They've put out 3 albums this year so far. And all of it is interesting and different than the thing before. So, I mean, as for a collector and as for someone who's really into music, Melvins are the band to check out.
John, I think you should give us your full-on assessment. You got a track-by-track breakdown for us?
Of Tres Cabrones?
Yes.
I actually haven't really, really sat down and really listened to it, because I actually want to do a review, but I won't be able to get to do a review till about this weekend probably. But, I mean, it's a great album. One of the better ones for sure. I might have liked the covers album this year more, a little bit better, because it had such fantastic renditions of Bowie's Station to Station, and as Roxy Music in Every Dream House of Heartache. But, I mean, the new album, it's great, man. I hope they put out a limited edition vinyl like they've been doing lately. But I love this band. I think if people haven't checked out this band, here's a good record to jump into. A fantastic, interesting, daring, challenging band that still maintains their core identity.
Wait, John, are you telling me that a band could put out a cover album that you could enjoy more than their originals?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because, well, I mean, not all their originals, but they warp the song so much and change them so much. I mean, they're just so, I literally could not believe how awesome In Every Dream, Home of Heartache was. That's Roxy Music's song. It's actually kind of like a synth proto-punk song by Roxy Music from 73. It's off their second album, I think. It's the one with Jerry Hall on the cover. For Your Pleasure. I think that's the second Roxy Music album. But the Melvins take it from a 4-minute track to an 11-minute track with Jello Biafra on the vocals. And the first half is like Jello Biafra, almost like an Oscar Wilde persona, like speaking with this weird accent. And then the second half, like, it just stops. And then Buzz Osborne just comes in with this badass original riff. And it just keeps building and building and building. And Jello Biafra goes, "Dream Home Heartache." And it gets more deranged with every chorus until the whole thing just explodes. It might be the most amazing cover I've ever heard.
A four minute song to an 11-minute song. I have no words other than.
It's the Melvins, baby.
It's the Melvins. Magic, right?
Magic. So do we want to wrap up this podcast, or is there any loose threads that we should mention? Or Adam, does you want to talk about how awesome the Melvins are as well? I know you're dying to do so.
I mean, I assume people only tune into the show to hear you talking about the Melvins.
Yeah, actually, from now on, we're just going to change the podcast to John on the Melvins. And every week, I'm just going to talk about the Melvins for an hour. I think that's what people want to hear.
You're going to give a great track-by-track breakdown, breakdown of every instrument, right? You know, the vinyl quality.
We could do like those, like, you know, I don't know if you guys ever listen to regular radio anymore, but at like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m., when they actually like let the DJs do what the DJs want to do when it's not programmed, if you listen to the oldie stations, they actually like do that with Elvis or the Beatles. And actually, it's really, I love it when you tune into it. It's like always like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. when no one's listening. Like the DJs are like really, really into Elvis, and they like explain the significance behind the song. And maybe they play an unusual unreleased version or a rare live track. And they talk about what is special about that particular version. And it's almost like a history lesson or an education. And that's my favorite thing about traditional radio.
I would listen to the radio if on Saturday, when I was parked by Brooklyn Museum, whoever helped themselves to my radio and my iPod, go touch a third rail, please. The off chance that they're listening to this podcast because they like punk, because they're breaking the cars, right? So I look forward to getting a radio back soon. So I'll start a GoFundMe.
Did that happen yesterday?
Yeah, it happened on Saturday.
Oh, man. Well, while you were at the thing?
No, not at the thing. I was at the Brooklyn Museum with my wife and sister-in-law and some friends, and it was a day out. And the one day I live in Brooklyn, for those who don't know, the one day I decided to leave the radio in my car because I felt a little lazy. It's broad daylight. There's nothing going on over here. Someone decided to help themselves to the radio and iPod. I left in the car. The iPod was not displayed, so they had to dig through the glove compartment for that. So
yeah, I mean, that sucks. They're gonna flip the radio for like $20. Meanwhile, it causes you like $400 in damage. I hate that.
Yeah, it sucks. But, you know, such is life. I paid the dummy tax. So, but yeah, if they're listening to this podcast, seriously, go touch a third rail. So.
Well, I think a wish of death is a good way to close out the podcast. What do you think, Adam?
I do. You want another piece of music here to kind of soundtrack
yes,
the vengeance
of Chris
Barrett? Let
us reach into your bag of holding before we turn it inside out and end the universe.
All right. So
you guys get that reference, right? I'm not the only nerd here, right? Right? Anybody?
Maybe we're not all nerds. I don't know.
Adam, you know, you had a bag of holding. You know what I'm talking about.
I have like a super Canadian thing that sort of sounds like that.
You guys do what I'm talking. You guys just being whatever. I hate you all. You guys are just trying to be cool.
Adam, just play
a stupid song. I don't care.
I was born after 1997, so I do not know that reference.
You were born after 1997?
No.
Oh.
Hold on. We have to give this reference its moment. So what the fuck are you talking about?
You don't know what bag holding is. A bag of,
oh, Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, a bag of holding is what you carry.
I have no idea. I was totally a different kind of nerd than you. So
nerds comes in all forms, shapes, sizes, and walks of life. Not Dungeons and Dragons.
A bag of holding is what you have in Dungeons and Dragons. It's a bag that's infinite on the inside, but finite on the outside. So you can carry as much stuff as you want inside of it, and you can always retrieve it. That's a bag of holding. But if you turn it inside out, either it disappears or blows up the universe, depending on.
Oh,
how
see, playing. that's like Shaman from Alpha Flight had a magic medicine bag that basically, if you turned it inside out, it would suck in the universe, or if you looked into it, it would drive you mad. You can only pull stuff out of it if you were, you know, Shaman. So anyways, we're all nerds. Let's kill this thing with a song from Youth Avoiders. So this is another from my set of deranged tracks that I'm playing here. So Youth Avoiders, one guy's from Paris, one guy's from Germany. Let's just say that they're European. The song is called Snake Charmer. It is from the record that they put out earlier this year on Deranged, which is a self-titled one. It came out over the summer. They're pretty awesome, and there's all kinds of frantic, crazy stuff going on here. So this is Snake Charmer by Youth Avoiders.
Snake Charmer by Youth Avoiders off of the new Deranged mixtape. Also on that mixtape is Smart Boys, which is an effed up side project, which is interesting. Anyway, thanks for listening to the podcast. Adam, thanks for showing up and being your usual classy self.
Yeah, I'll do what I can.
And Chris, thanks for showing up and wishing death upon people that would dare to steal from your palace, your mobile palace.
Well, sometimes you just can't go without a Tuesday without wishing someone death. You know?
And let us call out to our deity of death, our bringer of destruction, our avatar of chaos. Let us praise Sound Guy Nairman, he who wreaked havoc with his mere glare.
What the fuck you say?
And thanks again for listening to the Punk News Podcast. As always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions of the people expressing them exclusively and do not in any way express the opinions of punknews.org. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And until then, we will see you next week, unless you steal from our car, in which case we will hunt you down and kill you in a brutal fashion. We'll see you next week.